Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 103. About to wrap up the new year with the final game at home at TD Garden tonight between the Celtics and Clippers. An unbelievable ride. I'm looking back at the first game at TD Garden this year, and we have to go all the way back to the time where this team, you didn't know if they were going to get together, and you didn't know if they were going to be able to make it work with this core. And January 2nd, 2022, an overtime win over the Magic turns into a last-second loss, Brown missing a breakout layup against the Spurs and a 99-97 loss. They lose at the Knicks days later in that collapse, 25-point collapse, that made you wonder if this was over. And I can still go back to that video and pull that up and reminisce on me giving up on that core. Great quote from Jason Tatum the other night, though, about him and Brown. We're not Michael and Scottie. Obviously, they've passed Michael and Scottie in 30-point games, but we're not as bad as you guys said we are. Obviously, both he and Brown have talked about the fact that they've gone through that stretch where some thought they should be broken up. I didn't think they should be broken up, but I did think they were going to have to make a significant change to this roster at the time. But I do have my article saying never trade Brown, and see what Brown's doing now at 39 points against the Rockets on Tuesday. Big opportunity to go against Kawhi and Paul George here on Thursday. This team's down a 180. They're the best team in the league as the new year comes to an end. I'd be interested to see them and the Clippers play in the finals, and that's a big reason we have Lauren Murray on the show tonight. From The Athletic, I talked to him a year ago when the Celtics lost to the Clippers at home, 91-82, that 9% three-point shooting night, which was among a number of baffling games, a Christmas collapse against the Bucks. I actually reminisced on Jalen Noel going off against the Celtics just about a year ago, when the Timberwolves had nobody in their lineup. Celtics were going through COVID too at the time. Finally got everybody back in their lineup, got healthy, and they went on a run. Good overtime win against Indiana at home. They beat the Knicks and Kemba at home. Went on the road and destroyed Indiana before beating the Bulls in a tight game late. I think Robert Williams hit two free throws to cap that off. Look at me flashing my memory right now. Good win against the Pelicans, but again, bad losses against the Hornets, Blazers, and then they go to Washington on the 23rd, and that's where things really turned around for them. Epic performance from Smart that night. He said, "I love you" to all his teammates a couple weeks out from the deadline. I thought that was kind of ominous, and they just kept winning from that point on. And their record since then is just ridiculous. 23-24 going into that game. They finished that year 51-31, so they only lose 7 games the rest of the way. They win 18, so 18-7 to close that year. Their record this year is 25-10, so 17 losses. Let's do a little math for the wins. 43-17 since then. In the regular season, obviously an NBA Finals appearance as well. What a year for the Boston Celtics. They saved themselves. They obviously have big aspirations for 2023 as we go into it. But everything they've done this year has been pretty great since that rough start almost a year ago. And we're going to look back on it with Law Murray, who did tell me, if you go back to that podcast at the time, that they'd be all right, that they should stick this out. And they did, and the rest is history. We'll follow it into 2023. Thanks for sticking with us here. We'll do some music episode either on the first or before that. And then we get some interesting news for you about the program into the new year that I'll share with you soon. Of course, we're brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.ag is your number one spot to bet on everything. And when I say everything, it is everything. You got NFL and bowl season going on. NFL playoffs right around the corner, just a couple weeks away. That super wild card weekend. I know Syracuse is playing in their bowl right now. Esports, they're on there as well. And of course, the World Cup was great. That is since concluded. But you'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. It's live betting, free contests, live scores. That information is what I love. Awesome website with tabs on the left side to go through pretty much every sport league you can imagine. They're the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. So head over to betonline.ag, that's betonline.ag, to save 50% or get 50% back on your first deposit. $100 gets you 50 free to play. Use the code CLNS50 when you sign up. That's CLNS50. BetOnline, where the game starts. And of course, a special shout out to Athletic Greens, sponsor over at the Garden Report. Go to athleticgreens.com/garden for a year's supply of vitamin D. So those 5 free travel packs when you head over there. That's betonline. That's athleticgreens.com/garden. Vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics. That's what's in their formula. 75 of those and more. Whole food source. You put in your drink and you pretty much have everything you need for your health. A nice energy boost with tropical flavor. Love it. Everybody else loves it too. Go check the reviews if you don't believe me. It's athleticgreens.com/garden. And Rocket Money. RocketMoney.com/garden brings you to their app where you're going to get a chance to unsubscribe from subscriptions that you don't need. Maybe get a chance to save on subscriptions you don't use or want to save some money on. It's an option over there as well as great financial tools in the app. Go check it out. It's super useful. I think they'll even have more to offer you over there than you think. That's rocketmoney.com/garden to download. This has been Dome Theory. Subscribe, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and more. And go check out our live streams on YouTube. Subscribe to CLNS Media and Celtics All Access to get those. Here he is from The Athletic, Law Murray. Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 103. Law Murray is back with us from The Athletic. Clippers reporter. It's great to see him out in LA the last time these two teams met, and unfortunately not out here in Boston for the rematch, but I'm gonna talk to him a little bit about these two teams that, you know, the more I think about it, well, this could be a finals matchup when the time comes in June. I think it's probably about as likely as any other that we could stack up here if the Clippers are able to get healthy and the Celtics stay healthy. In fact, as these two teams meet tonight, fully healthy on both sides, aside from Gallinari, who's been out for Boston, and some G League assignments for the Clippers. If these two teams are healthy, I think it's hard to argue for any other matchup. But health is a big issue for certain parts of both of these rosters going back a year or two now.
I think that's a consideration for everybody, Bobby. Obviously, we are a long way from, forget June, we're a long way from April, right? We got to actually see what the playoff field looks like. Both of these teams, the Celtics in the East, the Clippers in the West, they're going to have to get through a 7-game series against 3 quality teams. And, I mean, the Celtics definitely have the harder conference, but the Celtics have been through that conference just last year. The Clippers haven't done that yet. The most we've ever seen the Clippers do is get to the Western Conference Finals. Now it's 2 years ago. So the pieces are there for both teams. Obviously, the Celtics have shown that they can get to the finals. The Clippers, they have a much more challenging road, both getting through the regular season and then showing that they can beat the teams that are, at least from a regular season standpoint, better than them. And It's going to be fascinating. We got plenty of time, but we can enjoy this game Thursday night.
I'm impressed by the Clippers still. They've had some tough losses without Kawhi and George this year. But overall, you look at their defense that's hovered around the top 5 without those guys for significant portions of the schedule. Kawhi went down pretty early after his return with the stiffness there, and George has kind of been in and out too. They have these games where they pretty much rest everybody, but that defensive stature that they maintain throughout all these different lineups, they obviously have a very deep team in terms of talent there.
I've been impressed by that, but the offense just hasn't gotten off the ground at all, really, this year. I remember early they were floating down there with the Lakers at the bottom. I think they've jumped up a little bit since they've gotten their lineup back, but what's the story of the team so far this year when it comes to their identity and pretty much what they've been able to produce this year so far?
This is a team that offensively has so many different players who can initiate and start plays. Now, that's not always a good thing, especially if one or two of your stars that you build your entire offense around is unavailable. Kawhi not being on the floor leave the Clippers without their most careful playmaker. And you don't normally say that about a star, but that's the case with Kawhi Leonard. Like, he has developed to the point where he makes the right play so often, takes care of the ball, and because of who he is as far as a player who can draw to, that just lifts everybody's level offensively. It lifts Paul George as a star. It lifts role players. And the other play starters don't have as much on their plate. Now, when I say play starter, I'm talking about guys like Norman Powell, John Wall coming off the bench. Norm started this season for the first week and a half. It didn't go well, you know. Now you see Norm, especially right before his injury, and now he's been back from his groin injury that he missed a few weeks with. He's been back for a week. He's playing the kind of basketball that the team envisioned when they acquired him in February. John, actually, he's the one who needs to kind of pick it up. But again, John has been out so often over the previous four NBA seasons, and he's a different player at this age of his career. But he gives the Clippers a different dynamic. So that's an adjustment period. Reggie Jackson is a guy who he had to do way too much last year, which is why the offense was bottom 10 last year. Reggie is so much better when he's playing with Paul and Kawhi. He's so much better, so much more efficient. And so when you look at the identity of this team, it's drive, kick, swing. It's touch the paint, not necessarily get shots in the paint, because the Clippers are very close to the bottom in terms of scoring in the paint itself. But when they have their full complement of players, they have what they have the cooks. When Paul and Kawhi aren't playing, Ty Lue likes to say he has a lot of guys who can eat but can't cook. He's got the cooks, and they're playing better basketball in December.
How's Kawhi look to you? Because he was phenomenal in that game that these two teams played. It almost looked like his old self, offensively at the very least. Patient, those in-between shots, just torched the Celtics, and even got a couple of threes to go. I know that was one of the earliest struggles he had, was hitting that shot. You know, you talk about his careful playmaking and just sort of how much at ease the Clippers look with the ball in his hands, but how close is he to the old Kawhi?
I mean, Kawhi is going to continue to progress on a monthly basis, and it's just a matter of reps, to stand on the floor, increasing his minutes, and doing what he worked so hard to do. That Celtics game was a mid-range clinic. That's where he got most of the offense from. And the reality is this, that was his breakout game. And it came against the Celtics team that we see what their roster construction is. It's all we talk about, Bobby. Like,
yep,
the two apex predators on the wing who can play both ends of the floor. I mean, he was giving Jaylen Brown all the work in the mid-range. And so it was a great matchup for Kawhi, to be honest with you, because, I mean, if we're being real here, the mid-range gives the Celtics defense some problems. Like, they give up a lot of those shots, and for whatever reason, teams are extremely efficient in the mid-range against the Celtics. Well, Kawhi, that's the best part of his game. That's the thing that he works at more than anything else, I think. I mean, more than the three, more than the contact in the post, more than finishing. Obviously, he watches a lot of tape. That's why he's prepared as he is to go up against the array of defenses that he faces. But Kawhi is a mid-range master, and he got completely off against that Celtics defense. And so he's got more levels to get to, for sure. he can get more comfortable. He's gotten more comfortable this month because he hasn't had the interruptions in play that he had with the knee flaring up on him after week one of the season. And then he obviously sprains his ankle 3 games into his return from the knee stiffness and needed some time to recover from that. The more he plays, the more he gets into condition, the more he understands what defenses are trying to do, the more he gets into a cohesiveness with his teammates, the better he's going to be. He's got a long way to go, but we're only in late December.
Yeah, and that mid-range shot, they're going to give that up. I think that's what they want to do in terms of the way they play defense. They're one of those teams that's going to sell out to protect the paint. They've done a good job getting out to shooters, even when it's a Cornette contest. That's working a little bit for them. It's interesting. I'm glad you bring that up because they lost a couple games earlier in the year. Chicago, obviously a team that can just crush from mid-range with DeRozan. Cleveland's given them some trouble. I remember JB Bickerstaff saying after that game, like, we love taking the mid-range against them. If you're going to give us that, we're going to take it all game long. And the Clippers are another team, I guess, that if you're just going to hand it to them, they're going to take it. And they just torched the Celtics in that third quarter. It's good to have George, too, who can take a ton of threes and hit them at a pretty high rate. I think he's averaging, almost 8 a game at 38%. So that's just a ridiculous amount of shooting from him in terms of volume and efficiency. But then everybody else up and down the
street. Are you talking about mid-range or threes? Because that sounds like his three-point percentage.
Yeah, that's his threes. Well, I'm saying.
Yeah,
so
PG's mid-range is way, way more efficient. He's in the 40s. And the other guy is Marcus, a former Celtic. That dude gets to his mid-range like a star player.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what you have to kind of contend with when the Celtics defend the Clippers. It's the fact that, okay, Kawhi might have the ball and is willing to give it up. Paul is also a guy who can get to his spot and is willing to give it up. And chances are the Clippers, if they're coming out of an ATL, they're starting a game, they're not even calling it for Kawhi or PG. They're trying to get Marcus a look. And Marcus is incredibly efficient, again, playing with those two guys. So when you got to deal with that, and we're not even talking about who comes off the bench, that's a big part, not even the main part, but that's a big part of the Clippers offense. The Clippers offense is, again, touch the paint and see if you can get the three, but they are more than willing to attack the closeout or attack the free space. And that, more than often in today's NBA, is going to be that in between. Teams aren't not going to send you to the line. The Celtics do a great job of defending without fouling. They don't want to give up paint. No one wants to give up paint points. And then obviously how teams act out and make sure that they cover the three-pointer is going to define their defensive success most nights. The Clippers, you got to defend another area of the floor.
Yeah, George 43% mid-range. Kawhi 49, Morris 46. That's pretty good across the board there. I think they can really defend with that group too when you talk about that big three. It's interesting. I don't think a team has given the Celtics more issues than the Clippers did by going like five wings or at least big guards and switching everything and making them play in the half court particularly. I was actually talking to Marcus Smart about that today. He thought that the Clippers just jammed them up and made them play on top of each other in terms of the spacing. And that's everything for the Celtics right now. They don't want to shoot mid-rangers either, aside from Jaylen Brown, who's been pretty great at that. So if they're just kind of switching on the perimeter and cutting off a lot of those screens, or neutralizing a lot of those screens rather, getting out on the shooters, the Celtics don't shoot the ball at the rim a ton. So they just sort of had what was a historic offense coming into that game looking pretty stagnant that night, and it turned into a 20-point rout.
Yeah, they missed 30 out of 39 threes, which is not even the worst that we've seen in a Clippers-Celtics matchup.
That's right.
I was in Boston last year, and I watched, 38 out of 42 threes the Celtics missed. Jaylen Brown was the only starter to hit a three.
Did they finish 9% in that game? Because that's where they were at one point. I'm trying to remember exactly what they finished.
They finished 4 of 42. So, yes, below 10%. Like, they shot threes like a damn windshield.
Oh my god.
And the game was close. That was the craziest thing about that game. The Celtics beat the hell out of the Clippers on the offensive glass, but it wasn't an, I mean, they just couldn't hit. They just couldn't hit the threes. And Jason Tatum didn't play in that game. But 2 weeks earlier, Jason Tatum played and Jaylen Brown didn't play. And it was, again, you're talking about a Clippers team last year that didn't have either of Paul George or Kawhi Leonard in those two matchups in December of 2021. And so, if nothing else, the Clippers know how they want to defend the Celtics. They know that if the Celtics are going to prioritize shooting close to 43s, then they're going to make those threes hard as hell. They're going to, like you said, like Marcus Smart said, they're going to jam them up. They're going to make those threes stressful. So in other words, you can get that shot up, but you're making that shot where guys are not shooting it in rhythm. One of my favorite things that I heard a coach say, and I didn't realize that time because I'm not used to Joe Mazzulla's cadence, you know. But when Joe mentioned the ball finding energy, his version of ball finding energy, you know, spacing, ball movement, player movement, and the joy that comes with it, you know, shooting with confidence, giving guys confidence. Yeah, that's what it looks like when guys hit threes. You know what happens when you take that spacing away, when you make that ball movement a little bit more difficult? You can still shoot the three, but it don't feel as good. So Joe bringing that up, and then Joe watching his team miss 30 out of 39 threes. I mean, I know Joe can't see right now, but it's going to be interesting to see what the adjustments are going to be when the Clippers have established how aggressive they're going to be on the perimeter.
And that's, I'm looking back, there was actually 1 year ago today, which is pretty crazy, that those two teams met in Boston. The lineup was for the Celtics, Pritchard, Langford, Horford, Rob, Brown. Brown goes 1 of 13 from 3. That's the only 3 that the Celtics starters hit. Horford 0 of 7, Romeo 0 of 3, Pritchard 0 of 5. Grant hit a pair off the bench, but otherwise it was Broderick Thomas 0 of 3. He was playing that night. Josh Richardson 0 of 5. It was horrible, and they just kept shooting. Yeah. And that's the one thing, like, this team, they shot 56 threes on Sunday or Tuesday against the Rockets, which was actually a Celtics record for regulation. They just launch shots. And, you know, I guess we might as well get into the Celtics now. I love this team. I love a lot of the things that they do. I love the way Joe's coached them. But there's been nights where they are just firing away from outside. And it brings me back to the 2018 Rockets, the 2019 Bucks. Some of those teams that were, like, in terms of percentage of shots that came from three, highest ever. Celtics right up there with them. And then, of course, a million different Warriors teams that we've seen over the last however many years. I don't know. I think whether it's just an aesthetic thing or seeing how that's gone for some teams in recent history, I don't love it. And I don't know how you feel about it, but it can look great. But then there's other nights where it's just not there, like the games we've talked about, and they don't really seem to have many other alternatives in terms of reliable offense.
Well, if I were to make a suggestion, because I did a shooting rankings for The Athletic earlier this month, and I did it with the Celtics in mind.
Yeah.
And you know how writers are. If we plan a long-term story, we want to be validated by the performance afterwards. You know, there's nothing better. And there's nothing worse than a team or a player that you're highlighting and profiling, and then they go and they do the exact opposite of what your narrative is. Yeah. And that's what the Celtics did to me, man. Like, you know, I had this shooting ranking. I'm looking at the Lakers game that they played the night after, you know, they missed all those threes against the Clippers. And, I mean, they lived and died on that three. When the threes were falling, they were killing the Lakers, a team that can't shoot. At a high level.
20 okay? point game, yeah.
And then when I think the Celtics, I don't know how many threes in a row that they missed, but it correlated with the Lakers getting not just back into the game, but dominating and taking a double digit fourth quarter lead. But again, the Lakers took that 13 point lead with four some minutes to go, and the Celtics, they forced overtime with with some threes, and then Jaylen Brown hits a 30-foot dagger in overtime, right? So when your identity is heavy perimeter shooting, you gotta just keep shooting it. You gotta, because it's not just we're gonna shoot the three. It's what Joe Mazzulla said that leads to it, the process of it, the spacing, the ball movement, the personnel that you have on the floor. If you got guys who can shoot the three, the guys who take the most damn threes are the two stars.
Yeah.
And they're not even the guys shooting the best, you know. Jaylen and Jason, they took what, 31 threes combined against the Rockets the other night? That's whole teams. Like, yes. The Clippers, they attempted only 25 threes as a team against the Celtics this month. As a team. That's what it is. Jason and Jaylen are two guys that can hit the mid-range shot. So, and again, those guys are so damn good. And it's not like they're shooting a three poorly. They're so damn good that there's a reason the Celtics have won, what, four times?
Three in a row.
The Celtics are the best offense in the league. We're not really going to trip about that.
Yeah.
But the good thing for the Celtics is that when teams like the Clippers, like whoever they wind up facing in the playoffs, when these teams game plan and want to take the threes away aggressively, they have guys who can hit the big shot, and it's their best players. And I think that's going to be something that the Celtics are going to fall back on. Maybe they don't need it when they're playing haphazard, disorganized defenses like those Rockets, but against teams that are locked in and they're trying to prove a point, the Celtics, they're going to have a counterpunch at some point. I would expect to see that. So I'm not too worried about a team like them having the 3-point volume that they do.
So I got to give it to you. Year ago or so, probably a couple of days, we talked Celtics obviously in despair after that loss, just off this terrible start. I guess their record after that loss was, don't have it on here, but it was
bad.
500. Yeah, they were doing bad.
And the vibes were bad too. It wasn't just that they didn't have the best record. The vibes were bad. We can talk about it.
Vibes were bad. Joe Johnson was on the roster now that I look too. It was, yeah, that whole stretch where everyone's in and out with COVID. Jaylen, Jason both got into this thing with Smart. You had that players only meeting in Orlando. Yeah, it was just every other week it seemed to be something with this group. And then a couple of weeks later, they blow the 25-point lead to the Knicks in New York. And I'll never forget Ime Udoka just shooting out of the locker room, you know, 2 minutes after they lost, essentially, to the podium and saying, you know, I don't know about our mental toughness. Like, this group just needs to, like, figure out a way to stop the bleeding and not add to it and blah, 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 blah. Just essentially said, like, can we try to do something here to save us? Because we are just a disaster. And they turned it around slowly. And I remember you at that time, you had confidence that they were going to be able to turn this around. And I remember after the Knicks game, I thought they were done. And I didn't think they had to trade Jaylen, but maybe Smart, maybe just shake this up somehow. And they just were patient. They got it together for 3 or 4 weeks, started slowly making some progress there, and they get White at the deadline, and the rest is history there. What gave you the confidence at the time that, as bad as it looked then, that they'd be able to turn it around?
They have two stars at the most valuable positions to have them. That was it for me. Like, so many people get bored with, I don't want to say mediocrity, but like it's one of these things where you hear blow it up too damn much. Okay. Like we say that about great teams, you know, especially haters, you know, team playing great, but you hate. So it's like, man, I hope those dudes don't like each other. You know, because you feed off of that, those seeds of dissension. We saw that with the early 2010s Miami Heat. You know, they lose in the finals and you're thinking, oh man, we hate these dudes. How great would it be if they just totally collapse? Let's see if they can fire a coach or find a way for D Wade and LeBron to not get on that banana boat. You know what I mean? Unfortunately for the
league. That's there with the Nets too recently. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, well, the Nets do it to themselves. So. Look, 10 straight wins though. A lot quieter now than it was when Steve Nash was coaching, right?
Yeah.
So the point about the Celtics, like, yeah, these two guys who hadn't got out of the East at that point, they had been close. How many conference finals? Like three conference finals before 2022. So, you know, they were coming off a first round loss. They changed front office. They got a new head coach in there. And you're like, you already made some changes. Just blow it up, because people love to see that whole trades we love to see. Everyone loves to see some big names get involved, change some teams, you know, get a refund on some jerseys or something like that. Like, that's all that was. Like, it was a new system, and I liked what the Celtics were doing. I saw outlines, especially defensively, of a team that they just needed to play. They needed guys to get, like, Jalen missed how many games to start that year, right?
Like, he missed the playoffs the year before.
Exactly. Like, you just need, if you have two really good players, just get them playing together, especially if it's a new coach, especially if you're changing a roster, which Brad Stevens wound up doing again. Okay, they lost that Knicks game, right? And they started to get a little bit better. And then Brad's like, let's screw the depth. Like, let's go a little top heavy with the rotation. And to be honest with you, they kind of screwed that up a little bit, because, I mean, God bless those guys at the end of the bench. You know, I'm talking guys 9 through 15. But, you know, I think if they were one or two players deeper, they might have got through the Warriors. You know, their starting lineup worked. Horford, yeah. Williams, Brown, Tatum, Smart. That starting lineup worked against the Warriors. It was when they had to make a sub, that's when things went awry. Well, this year, they are a little bit deeper. Malcolm Brogdon, not that he's playing great, but he just makes them a little bit deeper, complements things a little bit more. When you bring in a guy, you know, like Derek White midseason, even when he played well, there was this feeling that, okay, maybe he can be better after he spends some time with his teammates, gets a training camp, and then goes through a full regular season with them. You're seeing that. Derek White, the Celtics are outstanding with Derek White on the floor. So my feeling just last year was a matter of, I cover a team with two great wings that people wanted to see them split up, you know? Two wings that it's like, oh, they're on the floor together, and they're unstoppable. People love to say, Paul George needs his own team, you know, when Kawhi Leonard was out, because that was the reaction to, you know, the Clippers not working out or whatever. So it was the same thing. I just saw similarities, and I was like, you know what would be stupid? Breaking those two guys up, because you're not going to get equal talent back.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about now that they're second all time in terms of 30-point games between a duo, and racing toward Shaq and Kobe for the number one spot. They'll surpass them easily next year at some point, I'd imagine. And, you know, they're ahead of Jordan and Pippen even at this point. And Tatum had that great quote the other night about, you know, everyone wanted to split us up, but, you know, we're not quite Michael and Scottie yet, but we're a lot better than the guys said we were, something to that effect. It was a great quote. Training Brad never made any
great
sense.
Perspective. That's the other thing that I like about these dudes. Jason
they're
doesn't turn
great
20
group. They are a great group.
Like, Jason doesn't turn 25 until March, right? Yep. Scottie Pippen, when he turned 25 years old, September of 1990, that was his first championship season. Okay. Yeah. Like, Scottie turned 25 September of 1990. And then 1991, the Bulls win their first.
That's what got lost, right? Who is one before 25 in terms of stars? It just doesn't happen. Like, Magic, maybe those kind of guys, like upper echelon all the time. But it takes time.
I mean, you got Dwayne Wade, but who did Magic have? He had literally the most dominant player of the decade. Okay, yep. And Kareem. I know Magic, you know, won the Finals MVP. You know, because the league needed to sell, but like, Magic literally would not have come into the NBA at all if the coin flip went to another team. Okay, if the Bulls would have won the coin flip that year, Magic stays at Michigan State. People don't want to talk about that. Okay, convenience worked out for Magic Johnson and that franchise. It's the same thing that happened with Dwayne. Okay, I mean, Dwayne was great on his own, but things change when you get Shaquille O'Neal's last great seasons, okay? Shaq was an MVP candidate in Dwayne's second year, and the next year, not even a great team, a team that, you know, started poorly, made a coaching change. You know, Pat Riley came downstairs for the last stint of his coaching career, and they got it done. A veteran team around a great singular star and another star at the very end of his prime, the very end of his prime. But that's the difference. It's like these two dudes are doing it together. It's those two. It is more like Scotty and Mike. And if anything, they're even closer than Scotty and Mike ever were. Scotty and Mike had 3 years between them. And when Mike got there, Mike was already at GOAT status. Okay. Larry Bird was already calling them God and your Jesus in a basketball jersey, right? It's like Jason and Jalen, they're establishing each other together. And not even the Clippers had that. The Clippers got Kawhi and PG after those two dudes already had Hall of Fame careers. Okay. Kawhi literally had two finals MVPs before coming to the Clippers. And then Paul in his own right was the only thing good about the Indiana Pacers franchise since the Malice at the Palace. And then he was a MVP candidate in his own right in his last year with the Thunder, even though both of his damn shoulders didn't work. Like,
and the difference is the age and, yeah, the health exactly. And everything else that you're looking at. Because, listen, if Kawhi and George were healthy every night and playing at their peak, that they should be right now. I was taking a look at that Ringer top 100 list that they did. I think Kawhi was way down the list, but said if his body didn't betray him, he'd be top 10 on every list. And it's true. Like, you see him at his best and his defensive peak, which I still think we're waiting to kind of see right now again, once he starts playing a long string of games, they'd be right there neck and neck with Brown and Tatum at the very least. But Tatum's availability, just going out there and playing 40 minutes every night like it's nothing. He'll fall over and you'll be like, oh, is he nicked up now? But he's fine every time. Like, this guy's as healthy of a young player as I've ever seen. Brown's had his hamstring stuff here or there, but another guy who plays huge minutes is super reliable out there every night. And then just the burst that they have. You see that game on Tuesday. They're both just running and throwing down windmill jams. And Tatum slamming on Giannis's head on Christmas. And there's just that youthfulness to them that makes them so exciting that I think just puts them so far ahead of Kawhi and PG right now, just because of the reliability. And I think for Celtics fans, what makes it so much better, and Celtics fans love this team finally. I know they were panicking a year ago, but I think they always had that love for Brown and Tatum at the very core. The last great team that the Celtics had was old. I mean, KG, Pierce, it was sort of like this Clippers thing in some way. Like, they're out, they're hurt, KG misses a year, their fingers are all taped up, their knees are hurting. It's just an old team, and they sort of played like it too, like kind of stiff and slow and defensively oriented. Now you just have this offense that's flying around everywhere, and they're fun to watch, finally, because last year was a slog at this time. There's something to be said about having a young team now, even though there's going to be the downsides that come with having a young team. They just have such a wide window right now because of where these guys are in their careers, and they might not be able to take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of them right now because of the experience factor, and I think that's still the biggest thing we saw in the finals, but you'd rather have this team.
But now they had that experience.
Right. Yep.
That's the thing. Like, these dudes, from a team standpoint, literally have now done everything except win that championship. They've gone through every round of the playoffs, every single round. I don't think either one of them even knows what it's like to miss the playoffs. They've, you know, like, that's the benefit of the gift that the Brooklyn Nets bestowed upon them with that Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett trade. Like, those, the Celtics, they missed 1 year, okay, between Doc and Brad Stevens, right? And they've basically been in the playoffs ever since. And the lottery pick that they got from missing the playoffs wound up being Marcus. Like, that's a luxury. That's a luxury. Some teams have had similar blessings, but they haven't been able to cash out. Like, the Celtics got two stars. One guy who is my MVP right now, even though Nikola Jokic is going to make a whole lot of people uncomfortable, you know. For right now, again, it's early, man, but I mean, look, it's going to be highly competitive, even more competitive than the last couple of years. You know, Giannis and Joel are afterthoughts, which is sick to even think about that, because those dudes haven't fallen off. You know what I mean? It's just that you've got Jason Tatum. You got Zion Williamson. Luka Doncic plays on the worst team with an MVP candidate probably, but is also literally doing what he's doing right now to drive that conversation. I mean, yeah, Tatum right now, though, I mean, the Suns got the most wins in the league. Look at the plus minus. Look at what Tatum is doing. He elevates that team, even with a great player next to him in Jaylen.
And this, you know, MVP is one thing, but you even just stack up the top seven in the league right now. And yeah, I'll go to seven. I've never seen it tighter. And yeah, you know, like the league's obviously just stacked with great players at this point. But this top seven right now, this year in particular, whatever order you want to put them in, Giannis, Curry, Jokic, Doncic, Durant, Tatum, Embiid. They're all right there. You can make a case for any one of those seven guys as number one right now. And Curry's hurt, but you saw what he was doing before that. Can I put you on the spot? Yeah. How are you stacking up those seven guys right now?
I already told you my number one is still
Tatum. This is best players, not MVP.
Oh, yeah. Best players. That's a tough spot for me, man. That's a tough spot for me because,
it's hard.
I mean, yeah, it's hard, and I'm not one for y'all. Don't see me ranking a whole lot.
Let's go MVP then.
I'll rank certain elements of things, but I think so much of that is within your context. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's hard.
Let's go MVP then.
I mean, shoot, right now, Jason, even with everything that's happening right now, Jason would be my MVP, but Jokic is right behind him now. And I got Zion in my
really?
Top. Yes. And last night when they played the Timberwolves, that was an MVP moment for him. So we've had MVP moments from Jokic. We've had MVP moments from Luka, who I don't even know if Luka would be in my top five for MVP right now, because I'm so big on
someone's gonna be left out. Winning, yeah,
but, yeah, someone's gonna. I'm not even worried about guys getting left out, but you know, I mean, I'll give Joel Embiid and you know guys like Steph Curry, Ja Morant before I even Donovan Mitchell. But just because of the quality of the team, that's my main thing there. But all those guys that I've already mentioned, you know, in order, by the way, they're on quality teams, you know? Yeah.
And you got to throw Durant in that mix too. You really do. Cause the run they're on right now, the way they started and everything they've gone through too. Cause that's the context, right? I think Jokic, for me at least, and I'm not as big of a Jokic guy as others, especially in this conversation, not the MVP one, but the best players. I think Embiid, if you're just picking one of those two, I think you go Embiid just because of the defensive ceiling he gives you. But, you know, you can't argue with Jokic's offense. And last year in particular, he's missing Murray. He's missing Porter. He's missing all these guys. It's hard to argue against the context that you talk about there that makes him most valuable. I mean, they wouldn't even been a play-in team without him, and instead they're competing with everybody.
And in a lot of ways, Jokic doesn't really have those two guys either. Like, so many people are excited for the Nuggets because so many people think that guys just come back from injury and have no complications whatsoever. Jamal has been mostly available, but Jamal is searching for his game as things progress, kind of like another guy who is coming back from an ACL tear that we discussed earlier, right? Michael Porter has missed even more games than Jamal has. Not that Jamal's had any serious injury layoffs, but Michael Porter certainly has. I mean, Michael Porter's missed, he's only played 20 out of 34 games. So, I mean, when you think about that context of it, it's like, man, Jokic is still elevating that team, you know, and that team is still a tire fire when he's on the bench. I don't like looking at teams to say, oh, you suck when you don't play. That's not what makes an MVP for me. what makes an MVP for me is how good are you when you are on the floor? And that's what the difference is. Like, it just so happens that for Denver, it's both. Yeah. It's like they're so great when he's playing, and they can't, they really fall off the rails in the 10 minutes that Jokic sits.
They're one seed. Yeah, that's going to help them a lot this year.
They're a two seed now. Again,
tiebreaker.
Zion came through.
Man.
Zion's Pelicans are leading the West. He's going to be in the MVP conversation. It's just that
simple. Stay healthy, please. That's the thing for him. And, you know, they're going to be interesting in the West. I want to hit on two more West teams before we get you out of here. But Pelicans are so interesting to me because you put them out there healthy. They're top 10 defense. I don't know how with that personnel, but they've done it. And obviously their offensive ceiling is just massive when Zion's out there looking like himself. They're the finals team to me, I think, if everything goes right. And obviously the Clippers are right there with them. We'll see with Denver. There's a lot of teams out there. Memphis is actually terrible against the West. I saw that the other day, that their record against the West just is not good, which is funny because Ja's not worried about the West. But Zion, Pelicans, what's it going to take for them to reach the finals? Is it just Zion being healthy and himself, or do they need something else? Because they obviously have all these picks on the table too that they could play with right now.
I mean, they got picks. They got they have such quality in their roster. They have such cohesiveness. Like, literally, the roster from last year is back except for a top 10 pick in Dyson Daniels replacing Tony Snell. Like, that's the thing people don't talk about the Pelicans. Like, these dudes know each other. And we still haven't seen their ceiling because Brandon and Zion have played 12 games together, I believe.
That's another thing they have.
That Pelicans offense is even more unstoppable when Brandon Ingram is. They're already a top, around the top five offense, somewhere close around there. When Brandon Ingram is on the floor, they're that much more lethal. Mid-range game. I keep saying it, man. So, like, what's it going to take for the Pelicans? Look, the Pelicans gave the Suns hell as a under 500 AC.
A great series.
As a play-in team, a team that had to win two playing games. It reminded me of the Memphis Grizzlies previous year. Memphis Grizzlies were a 9, won two playing games and stole the Warriors playoff spot, just like the Pelicans stole the Clippers playoff spot. They weren't super competitive against the Jazz, but obviously they stole one game, and Ja had a massive performance in the game that they lost. And the Grizzlies took that experience and turned it into a top 2 seed in the West and a playoff series where they should have beat the Warriors. They outplayed them until the fourth quarter of those games in that series. Okay, so the Pelicans are, I think, even more. They have even more to offer from an offensive standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, from just a cohesive standpoint, from a depth standpoint. So it's just going to depend on who they run up against in the playoffs, because that's really what it was with Memphis. Memphis just they found the wrong team to deal with in the bracket. I don't know who that team is yet for the Pelicans. That's why the regular season matters, because we can see what things look like a little bit. We can, you know, you use the regular season to get yourself ready for the playoffs if you're making it, or to get ready for the all season if you're not, you know. And so there's a lot of information yet to gather. But honestly, if you're the Pelicans, you don't really need to make a move. Just wait for Brandon to get back and see what it looks like. They're going to have the same assets this offseason, and they might even get a top 5 pick courtesy of the Los Angeles Lakers.
Victor Wembanyama on that team, man. Oh, wow. That's what we need, huh? That'd be the next super team there. If he is who everyone thinks he is, that's unbelievable that they're in position to do that. Talk about, I mean, David Griffin, he was kind of on the edge there for a little bit. Things were looking shaky with Zion, and now all of a sudden that Lakers trade is evening out. They got all those picks, Zion's himself, man, and Ingram.
David Griffin worked for Dan Gilbert in Cleveland. I'm sure he ain't
tripping. What a team. And I'm glad, like, that's a market that could really use a boost like that, because I don't know, they haven't been one of the stronger markets, and that place is just going to be packed going crazy. They were during that playoff series, to their credit. Center is interesting for them, though. I like Valanciunas. I don't know, in a playoff series against a team like the Clippers, it's going to spread them out five wide, or even the Celtics if it eventually got to that point. I don't know how that fares. They do have Larry Nance, but they could probably use at least someone who's able to let them go small a little better than they're able to now.
Yeah, their rim protection is chewable, to use a term I enjoy using. That is, if you're playing the Pelicans, that is probably their weakness. Even though they're big and they have length and they have athleticism, they don't have all those things in the same package. Yeah. And you can beat that team at the rim. They can. They're aggressive. They're smart defensively. They know what they want to take away. They rebound extremely well with Valanciunas on the floor. But if you're playing the Pelicans, you probably want to get to the rim as much as you possibly can. They do have some defenders who can get chewed up, and they don't have a lot of protection at the rims. It's just, if you're playing that way, how are you defending them? And they're going to get more challenging to defend as this year goes on if Brandon's health comes around.
Let me sandwich one more West team in there. I did want to talk about the Lakers, that other team across town. But what is going on with the Warriors? This home-road split. I know Curry's hurt and Wiggins is hurt now, but it even precedes those two injuries. Just this weird start for them. Draymond in training camp. I'm not ruling them out again, because I did that last year and it came back to bite me. I thought they needed to make a deal and they didn't, and they won it all. But I don't know. This is really shaky what's going on with them. They had some great, great home wins. Even last night against Utah was pretty good. But when they go on the road, they just lose every time. I've never seen anything like it.
It's an energy thing. They have an incredible home base. They get up for those games. They're motivated to play well in those games, no matter who's playing. And one thing about them is their defense has been the culprit for them this season, right? So I think that when you're at home, your defense tends to be pretty good. But like a true good road team, chances are their defense is what travels. And yeah, let's just put it this way. They ain't been traveling much this year, you know. When the Warriors play poorly, it's not because they're shooting poorly. They're an outstanding shooting team, okay? But simply put, they don't bring the same energy when they're traveling that they do when they're at home. Like, they are a horrendous defense on the road this year. That's what it is. I mean, you know, the offense is not as good either, but I think you see that often in the NBA. But I mean, the Warriors are great because of their defense. And when they're at home, you know, not that they're great, but when the Warriors are home, like, yeah, they defend their ass off. They defend incredibly well at home. And they don't defend at all on the road. That's it. That's pretty much what it is. When they're at home, look at how they play defense. Look at the energy that they get. Did you see Christmas? Did you see them play against the Grizzlies? Yeah, they shut them up real quick, right?
It's unbelievable.
They don't bring that same energy on the road. It's just
they're 29th in defense on the road, second at home. That is just crazy. Like, They just don't show up on the road. That's all there is to it. You just said it.
Yeah.
And then at home.
Literally keep that same
and
energy.
Then at home, they're that team that won a title from last year. So you can't rule them out. Now, it's going to be interesting because they do have some holes on the roster. I don't think they're massive holes. Like, they lost Payton and Porter. It's not like staples on their roster. But
if Payton and Porter were still on the team, they would be in bad shape in a vacuum, right? Because those dudes ain't playing now either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Payton hasn't played all year with the Blazers. And Otto Porter, I don't think he's played
so,
any
games.
And he's
you tighten up the rotation. You play as hard as you can. Klay kind of gets back to the point he was last year. I think he's really the swing factor in whether they're a championship team or not, but they should be in that mix. And that's where the West gets really interesting.
I'll disagree a little bit with the vets. The vets can't be the swing factors for this team. The Warriors,
you think the young guys
chose
you. All right.
They have to be. And that's why you can't really rule the Warriors out. But you also can't completely trust them, because those young guys are in an ecosystem where they have those vets, they have the coaching, they have the culture, they have the environment, but also they've shown that it's not foolproof. Like James Wiseman is a young center.
We also just don't know if those guys are good. I don't think we do.
Yeah. I think there's an outline for them to be good, though. James Wiseman is not a complete bust to me. Like, he's just in a really challenging situation. Jonathan Kuminga shows flashes of a very useful NBA player, and I think he's on the right trajectory. Moses Moody.
Celtics.
Yeah, like, we're talking about guys who they've had real and glaring struggles, but like your team from last year, man, like, you just have to, you don't punt early on certain ecosystems. And the Warriors are one where it's like, I know they're struggling, but the way they're struggling, because they have a foundation of success, even with the young guys make things hard. The young guys are what makes performance so inconsistent and so variable. And I think that if you're asking me, do I think the Warriors crap out in the spring or figure it out? I'm going to lean towards them figuring it out.
Me too. I have to, just because we saw what happened last year. And we know what Curry's capable of right now, too. I mean, he was just as good as anyone to start the year.
Yep.
I do want to hit on the other team across town, or I guess across the hallway from you there, Clippers. Lakers, scary spot right now for them. But first, we're brought to you by Athletic Greens. athleticgreens.com/garden gets you a 1-year supply of immune boosting vitamin D, which you need this time of year, and 5 free travel packs of their powder with vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, and more. Pretty much everything you need from your health is in this product, and people love it. Go check out the reviews and go get yourself that vitamin D and 5 free travel packs at athleticgreens.com. And Rocket Money, love this app. Shows you what you're subscribed to, what you might not know you're subscribed to, and you can go over there and cancel it or try to get a better deal on the subscriptions you have when you head over there. That's rocketmoney.com/garden. Lakers. It's tough.
She wants to talk about the Lakers for a minute.
I just find them intriguing, and maybe I'm just captivated by what's there and what they did. For some reason, I'm just hanging on hope that this situation's salvageable. And I was right to start the year, because Davis comes out and plays like an MVP. He's raising their defensive ceiling to top 5-10-ish, which is unbelievable for that roster that just couldn't defend anyone last year. And then he's hurt again, which I guess is where the doubters are vindicated there, because he's just going to get hurt every time he steps on the court for a month, I guess. And this one's bad. I mean, stress fracture. Or I guess they're calling it a stress injury. It feels like they're downplaying it a little bit to me, which, if he's out for the year, just throw your hands up and rebuild. But they can't, because LeBron's extended and he can't be traded. And Russ isn't tradable. They've been down every road and avenue there. It's not even worth it at that point. Their pick's going out to New Orleans. I don't know what they do. They're just screwed. Like, are they just going to have to sit here and let LeBron play out his career and do whatever he wants and just deal with it? And then,
man, I'm not feeling sorry for the Lakers. I'm not feeling sorry for LeBron. Like, I love LeBron. I love him a lot more than 2018. He chose this. So, I mean, when you, like, LeBron heard more crap from Lakers fans than probably any other faction of NBA fandom, you know, maybe even more than the Knicks, a team that LeBron actively teased, you know, throughout his career, still does every now and again. So, but he chose this. Like, he joined a team that had the worst win percentage over the previous 5 years in the NBA prior to him getting there. they wasted his first year there with the drama and the backstabbing and the absolutely incompetent roster construction. And then the gift from the New Orleans, and not just the fact that there was a new coach or that there was a new complimentary star in Anthony Davis, but the focus of all those guys who went through that first year with LeBron to not have any of that drama come up. They were so together, and they weren't even that, they weren't a special offensive team. Okay. They had special offensive players in LeBron and AD. They were not a special offensive team. I don't think they were top 10 offensively all by the time the playoffs started, but they had a roster that really fit those guys offensively as far as shooters. No one talks about Danny Green. You know, Lakers fans threatened Danny Green in the NBA Finals, and that dude helped win them a ring. KCP,
okay? Even Kuzma.
Kuzma didn't have to do too much, right? And guys, when they don't have to do too much offensively, what does that do for their defense? It gives them more energy, more urgency, more of a will, because they know they're involved offensively, because they'll get that kick out pass every now and again. But you had your energy to defend your ass off, right? Force turnovers. That's what a Frank Vogel defense does. And that's why they were a special team. They kept it together. They had a roster full of guys who, you know, they were motivated to not add to the drama and the BS. That was a really difficult year, and I give them credit for winning that championship in a year where a bunch of other teams didn't. And then their general manager decided to blow the team up every single offseason since then, basically. And so when you add LeBron's advancing age, when you add Anthony Davis's lack of durability, which even AD acknowledged at the time of the contract that he recently signed, he took the full 5 years because he knows his body. He knows, let's lock this damn thing in now. And their roster has gotten smaller. It's gotten less shooting. And they blamed it on every damn body except the decision makers. And LeBron signed the extension. He's the one who asked for Russell Westbrook. And he's complicit in all this, too. So, I mean, what do the Lakers do? Get LeBron his points and watch 29 other NBA teams. Because I guarantee you what we're talking about, 29 other teams that either might make the playoffs or might have a damn lottery pick.
So the one interesting thing is whether they trade Davis. And I guess they kicked that around early in the year, because I still believe in him. Like, LeBron, he's going to do what he's going to do at this point. And he was teasing, I guess, like one of those weird press conferences he does where he's like, it's not my DNA to lose, and I got to play winning basketball and this and that. I don't know where else he goes. It feels like the minute he asked out, they'll just kind of cater to him, because, you know, he came there in the
first
place.
He signed an extension.
Yes.
He signed the extension. They didn't even trade Russ. He subtweeted the entire offseason. Before the offseason, he's watching the playoffs like, man, we ain't doing this again. I mean, LeBron going to get enough deleting tweets. And tweets last forever, okay? It's 2022, man. Like, look, like, what are we talking about, Bobby? They ain't trade AD. Who you trading AD for? You know what I'm saying? Like, you can trade AD and, you know, go back to your, you know, player. The Lakers do a great job drafting. You know, it, like, that's what you want, though. You do a great job drafting so that those players contribute to other playoff teams, not the team that the Lakers wind up building. You know, they got AD because the Pelicans accepted the future picks as well as the picks that they were developing in terms of Lonzo, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram. Is that what you're satisfied with? You just want to, it's the first conversation we had. People love this idea of blow it up, spin the wheels, you know, because that is easier on a fan base, I guess, than actually being in it. The Lakers, they're not in a good situation at all, but does that mean you trade the only guy who really, you know, one half of your only relevance right now? Like, AD and LeBron together, I think that team can at least slide into the damn play-in conversation.
I guess that gets you something, maybe a home playoff date, but I don't know. Are you?
Yeah, because no one wants to play those two dudes in a winner take all situation. Like, it didn't happen last year, right? They were so incompetent, so the roster was so bad that they didn't even give themselves a chance to make the play in, right? And so, like, but every team at the bottom there, the Clippers being one of them, right? they're keeping an eye on the situation because it's like, yeah, okay, we could beat the Lakers, but like, do you want to have a game plan focused on eliminating LeBron and them? Probably not.
I mean, look at that Celtics-Lakers game.
That's what it comes down to.
I mean, you hit LeBron and Davis on the right night and even Russ in that game for stretches until overtime. I think he's done a good job this year, and I didn't have any faith in that at all. So maybe after this year, you bring him back on a minimum. All of a sudden, you have an open cap space. If I don't know, it feels like they're just dreaming that someone's going to come into that slot. And I guess that's a fair assumption if you're the Lakers, but I don't know. Is it?
That's pretty much the whole Lakers franchise in the 21st century. Someone's going to come.
Is it Kyrie or is it D'Angelo Russell? Like, that's the big question right now, because I think they're just going to blow that on somebody. And if it's the right person, great. Maybe they're back in that mix like you talk about. If it's the wrong person, they're just continuing to double down with bad moves right now. Like DeRozan, what is that going to do? Like, that is just going to be another massive contract on their books that they're trying to figure out later, just like the Westbrook situation. Is that
up? Right. And it doesn't address their weakness as a team. We're talking, you're bringing up point guards, you're bringing up DeMar, who I adore DeMar. But they are the complete opposite of the defensive team that they were when Vogel got them into
the playoffs.
They had
all those wings. Like, I mean, those teams it's were, not like it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, the pressure on the ball that they had, it's a complete opposite because Darvin comes from the Bucks system where they're an extremely conservative defense. But what do the Bucks have? Even the Atlanta Hawks back when Bud was coaching them and Darvin was assisting with them, what did they have? They had size. They had, either Millsap and Horford playing together in Atlanta with big wings, or Milwaukee, the big wings and your bigs happen to be an outstanding rim protector in Brook Lopez and, a dominant defender with the physicality that Giannis Antetokounmpo brings you. I mean, yeah, when Anthony Davis plays, they're passable on defense. And when Anthony isn't there, they're a complete sieve. And that's the issue. We're talking about a bunch of dudes who, if let's say they get DeMar in a vacuum, let's say they get a point guard. We're talking about guys who aren't moving the needle defensively, and that's where the Lakers. That's where LeBron can't change games defensively anymore. Prime LeBron, Miami LeBron. Obviously, that was a big part of the Miami Heat, right? When they won the championship in 2020, that was a big part of the Lakers. Like, they defended, and they didn't just defend, but they put pressure on you. The Lakers are an extremely, extremely pillow soft defense right now.
Yeah, no one wants to talk about that. I still find them intriguing to some degree, but before we...
You wanted to talk about it. That's why we bring it up.
I know. I mean everybody else. Before we get you out of here, you wrote about our old friend Marcus Morris, who I still love, came back at his time here. I think a lot of fans still love him. And if you ask Jason Tatum, who was most instrumental to his career early on, he goes back to Marcus Morris, who played in front of him, played alongside him after that Gordon Hayward injury, just had a couple of great years here. Tenacious defensively. I still remember that moment where Tatum slammed down on LeBron and Morris is there, like, bumping his chest into him and screaming. You had that Tristan Thompson yell that became a meme. Morris is a great Celtic. Great move to bring him in, train Avery Bradley for him at that time. Like, just perfect timing there, going bigger and setting up a team that could have won a championship. And then he ends up leaving, going to the Knicks, ending up on the Clippers now. And he's in a pretty good spot on this roster. You kind of talked to him about Philadelphia and home and, people he's close with there. What's it been like just covering him and getting to know him a little bit?
I mean, I'm from Philadelphia too, so, what's crazy is, and this wasn't something that I put in the story, the Q&A I had with him, but he was real close to going to the high school I went to, Friend Central, which is, I think most NBA players, they're going to equate Friend Central with anybody. It would be DeAndre Hunter, since DeAndre is a current NBA player and a top five pick, right? So, and a national champion in college. So DeAndre Hunter went to Friend Central. I went to Friend Central. Marcus Morris was quite close to going. And I think Marcus was two or three years younger, two or three classes below. So him and Markeith, like, they were close. If they would have been able to, you know, get through the placement process, then it's like, man, I would have knew this dude as, you know, as a teenager, you know, I would have saw the come up even closer, you know. So I got some friends who, you know, they got some people who are familiar with him. I mean, again, if you're from Philly, Philly's a big city, but, you know, the way the city is, like, you just know, you're going to know people. So I've always had my eye on Marcus and Marquis for that matter. And, you know, Marcus don't talk all the time. And
quiet so, guy, yeah.
You can say he's quiet, but he also has a voice that carries. And you mentioned it with Boston. It's been that way with the Clippers. Last year, it needed to carry a lot more with Paul and Kawhi missing so much time and trying to get healthy. Those road trips, when those guys are back in LA, it's like, who's the guy trying to keep everyone together from a veteran perspective? Marcus had a big role in that. So he's an interesting player. He's a unique player. He's an underappreciated player by the Clippers fan base a lot. You know, you see a lot of Clippers fans who sometimes double as Clippers media. They don't really like Marcus that much. He's the guy that they would not be, you know, crying about if he wind up getting benched or traded or not playing for whatever reason. But he's an interesting piece because he mentioned it in this, and when we talked, when Kawhi and Paul are playing, he's a great complimentary guy, a guy who can get his corner three off, a guy who can be better defensively. And we've seen Kawhi and Paul not play a lot. And we've seen Marcus have to be the guy at the top of the scouting report. And obviously that brings his efficiency down and exposes his limitations. And he's got some big limitations. He's not the biggest guy. He's certainly not the best athlete out there. He's not a guy who, you know, he can have the ball in his hands, but it's not like he's making the best passes or anything like that. But he can get you by. You know, there's a reason they call so many ATOs for him. There's a reason he has the freedom to get to his mid-range shot. So he's an important piece for the team. He's getting paid accordingly. And he's been healthy, too. He did not start.
He's got the knees. Those knee things have kind of stuck with him. Yeah.
But it's been a year since that has been an issue. He had a great offseason. An offseason that was hard on him personally because of the losses that he's had in his personal life that we talked about that as well. But I mean, he got into shape. He played a lot of basketball and he came ready this season. And so, obviously, it'll benefit the Clippers for him to keep that up. But I think Marcus being healthy has been as important of his standing on the team right now than even the intangibles and obviously his skill set.
He's Law Murray. You can read him. You can read that at theathletic.com, covering the Clippers for them. Always great talking to you. Great seeing you out in L.A. and stinks that these East-West teams only play twice a year, but there's that chance we'll get the finals between these two, which I would love. Heading out to L.A. again. Great talking to you. Appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate you, man.